So this is a talk about billing for storage access in a cloud environment. So we're talking about cloud accounting, and we're talking about specifically infrastructure as a service type clouds. Clouds where the provider is making a set of resources available for sale to clients, and the clients should be paying for the resources they use. In these environments, the provider wants to recover all of the costs that are being incurred by the clients, and the clients want to pay fairly for their use, and both parties want to have a sustainable ecosystem. And in this talk, I'm going to talk about the storage consequences of accounting in these environments. So when we're talking about storage in a cloud, how do we incur costs when clients use the system? Well, when clients store more bytes in the cloud, we need to have more disks, right? Because the disks get filled up. So we need to bill for capacity. And the good news, as you would expect, most providers do this. The bad news is that there's another way that you can also incur a cost for storage in a cloud, and that is spending more time on requests. So even if your clients aren't filling up the disks in terms of capacity, they can be filling up the disks in terms of exertion, if you will, or in terms of utilization. You can be using up all your disk time, and so even though your disks aren't full, you need to buy more disks because you don't have spare resources available. So we also need to be billing for access in clouds for storage accesses. And the bad news is that not all providers currently do this. There are some that don't currently do this. And the worst news is that among the providers that do this, they don't use the right metric, in my opinion. So we need to fix this. So what do providers currently bill for? Well, they currently bill for things like IOs. They bill fixed cost per IO. That's the most popular approach. Some providers bill for bytes transferred off the disk. And some bill for things like megabytes per second. 1 megabyte per second costs a certain amount of money. And the problem with all of these metrics is that none of them matches the time you've used the resource, in this case a disk, times sort of the cost of the resource to operate on a per second basis, if you will. So why is this a problem? Well, let's look at the most common approach, a fixed cost per IO, and see why it's unsustainable. So suppose the provider charges 1 cent per IO, and I know these numbers are sort of scaled way up because IOs are much cheaper, but I'm just using these for simplicity. Suppose a provider charges 1 cent per IO, but it takes 1 cent per millisecond to keep a disk spinning and to amortize the cost of buying the disk. Well, then let's look at three different requests and see how much disk time they take on the system, what the real cost to the provider is, and then what the bill is that's being presented to the clients. So let's say a request misses in the cache and it goes to the disk, and the client is reading a file sequentially. So it's accessing a block on the disk that's right next to the last thing it read, so you don't really have to seek. Then the disk time it might take to handle that request might be only 1 millisecond. And so the real cost is about 1 cent, takes 1 millisecond, and the client pays the fixed cost of 1 cent per IO, and everyone's happy. So that's good. But the next scenario, let's say the request misses in the cache, and then it goes to the disk, and you have to incur a long seek to get to the right block on the disk. Well, that might take 20 milliseconds. And so the real cost to the provider is 20 cents because it takes 1 cent per millisecond to operate a disk in this hypothetical scenario. Well, the bill, and the way we bill in most of these cloud systems is a fixed cost per IO, so we only bill the client 1 cent, and the provider loses a significant amount of money because the IO was harder. Let's look at the third case. Let's say there's a cache hit. In that case, we never go to the disk at all. The request is absorbed in the cache. And so in terms of at least the disk, it's not costing the provider anything to handle that request. But once again, we have a fixed cost per IO, and we charge the client 1 cent, and the client now pays too much in this case. So this is an unsustainable approach because either the provider or the client's going to be unhappy, and it sort of depends upon what happens. Now, there are various alternatives. Some systems, we charge for byte. So instead of charging a fixed cost per request, we charge per the byte, number of bytes you've accessed, or we charge for performance like megabytes per second. But the problem is that both of these metrics also vary, just as in the previous example. The cost of a byte might be less or more depending on how far you have to seek, whether or not you hit in the cache, things like that. Another thing you could do is you could charge for the worst case. You could charge always 20 cents per IO or 30 cents per IO instead of a fixed cost of 1 cent per IO. And the provider would love that, but the problem is that the clients with easy requests pay too much. And the third alternative that you could do is you could charge for the average case, right? So if you charge each client sort of for the cost of an average request across the entire system, then the provider is going to recover all of their expenses. But some clients are going to end up subsidizing other clients. The clients with the easy requests are going to pay too much, The clients with the hard requests are going to pay too little. The provider's going to be happy because it all sums up in the end, but some clients are going to be unhappy because they're paying too much. And there's, you know, even more complexity behind that whole issue, because will the average change over time? So should your cost change over time? Maybe the mix of requests will change, and so your average will change. Maybe some clients will start to game the system when they realize that they can get away with paying too little because other people are subsidizing them. So there are various reasons why charging for the average case probably won't work out as well as you expect either. So the real solution is to charge for disk time and not for instance, a fixed cost per I.O. Suppose it takes a cent per millisecond to operate a disk, and you start charging clients a cent for every millisecond they take on their storage requests. Then if we look at this chart again, we're actually charging the right amount of money for each of these three requests and any others. The request that took a cent, we charge a cent. The request that took 20 cents, we charge 20 cents. The request that was free on the disk, at least we charge nothing for the disk access. We might need to charge for the cache too, but we don't charge anything for the disk access. So when we charge for disk time, and you know, we choose a rate for the disk time that matches the cost for the provider, the costs are being recovered fairly. Unfortunately, that doesn't solve the whole problem. There's a technical problem that remains. Even though we've fixed this metric issue, we also have to deal with a technical problem that resources may be shared across tenants, right? I mean, that's the whole reason why we're using the cloud in the first place. But that means that the workloads may affect each other. Workload A might be affected by workload B. So let's say workload A is sequential. Workload B might issue requests that disrupt workload A's locality on the disk. Or if workload A is a highly cacheable workload, workload B might, you know, issue requests that end up evicting workload A's pages and affecting how much, you know, what its cache hit rate ends up being. So this has the consequence that workload B can drive up workload A's bill, possibly in an unexpected and unpredictable way. So let's look at an example of this, and this is real-life numbers from a real-life system. Let's suppose we want to get 1 megabyte per second for a sequential workload and 1 megabyte per second for a random workload. If they have a dedicated disk, the exertion, the amount of disk time, the percentage of disk time you'd have to spend to get those performance levels might be 1.6% and 67% respectively. But when they share a disk, they interfere with each other's locality and their requests end up getting interleaved, the exertion it can take for the sequential workload can end up growing by more than an order of magnitude, because now a bunch of seeks are being inserted before its requests, whereas before it didn't need to have seeks because it's a sequential workload. So its bill could go up by an order of magnitude if you're just billing for simple disk time. So the random workload has increased the sequential workload's exertion. So how should we solve this problem? Well, we could bill workload B for its impact on workload A, but that doesn't really seem fair because it's not necessarily the fault of B that it coexists poorly with other workloads. It's not probably not a malicious workload, for instance. We could have the provider absorb the cost, but that's not very appealing either, right? Because either the provider will end up losing money, which is, you know, going to end up in an unsustainable business model, or it will have to pass along this cost as a hidden cost to consumers. And we're talking about an order of magnitude increase in some cases. So it's going to be a big amount of money to pass along. So I think the real solution is to avoid the interference in the first place. And so what we need in cloud systems where we're doing billing for access, for instance, for storage, is performance insulation. Performance insulation is a system property we've defined where another workload is not able to affect your efficiency, your exertion, or the performance you get in your sort of assigned period of time, in your share of time on the system, beyond a small factor like 10%. So performance insulation is a property that strictly limits the transient influences that affect your workload. And it means that your exertion bill, for instance, and your performance are basically intrinsic to your workload and not affected by the sort of transient set of other workloads that happen to be running at the same time and what they're doing. So to insulate storage systems, what we need to do is two things: preserve locality on the disk and provide predictable cache allocation. So to preserve locality, we do disk head time slicing. We give each workload a time slice like we do for a CPU that's long enough that it can execute with high locality for a period of time and basically get, you know, close to its intrinsic exertion by seeking between workloads infrequently. And we provide a predictable cache allocation by doing cache partitioning. We give each workload dedicated amounts of cache so that each workload gets a hit rate that's not affected by other workloads. And so we choose partition sizes based on the workload's access pattern so that we can control the hit rates they get and keep them predictable. And we've shown how to do this in storage systems in a FAST 2007 paper called Argon. So to go back to the chart I showed you before, if we have performance insulation in our cloud storage system, we limit the impact of the other workload to 10% or less. So in the case where we had a sequential workload and a random workload, they need a certain amount of exertion to get a certain level of performance when they've got the whole system dedicated to themselves. Their increase above and beyond that point is a small factor. And so each workload's exertion is close to the ideal because it receives dedicated disk time and dedicated cache space. And so the amount it's paying is not affected dramatically by the other workload. So to sum up, clients should pay for the resources they use in an infrastructure as a service cloud. For storage, we need to start billing for access because access also costs money. We need to buy more disks when the intensity of accesses increase. Disk time is what costs, not IOs, not bytes, not megabytes per second. And that's what should be the metric in cloud storage systems. The bills for each workload should be independent of the activities of the other workloads and predictable. If the workload is run twice, it should be the same if it's doing the same activity. And performance insulation is what's needed to make it fair, to insulate against the impact of other workloads and how they can interfere with your locality, your cache accesses, and other things that drive up your exertion. With that, I'll take any questions.
Hi, Zachary Peterson, Naval Postgraduate School. So maybe a quick confusing, why do you think cost, your fairness model is when cost equals what the user pays, which is like zero. Does cost include profit too, I assume?
Okay. Sure, so just for the sake of simplicity, I haven't been talking about profit, but you can imagine adding your 5% or your 10% or whatever on top of cost.
Okay, sure.
Having that be the cost.
So then I guess my question is, if this is the right metric, how did we come to the wrong metric in the first place?
Well, so obviously there are disadvantages to billing for exertion as well. The fact it feels like it's less transparent because you're not really exposed to the inner workings of how the cloud provider is placing workloads on disks, which workloads are coexisting together, how much time a particular request would take at the disk, and whether that's the same or different. So charging a simple thing, a fixed cost per IO, it's immediately obvious to the customer what they're going to be paying, or a fixed cost per byte, it's immediately obvious to the customer what they're going to be paying. So it's appealing from sort of a customer-facing standpoint. It's the right way to sort of just easily market the whole system. But you need to have something that long-term is going to match your actual cost of the provider. And so I think we need to move towards something that actually matches costs instead of sort of making up random numbers and hoping that they're going to recover costs. Just for the sake of simplicity.
Right, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's consumer protection. And it's not clear to me how you isolate an adversarial storage provider from marking up people's billing by increasing seek times or padding their wallets, right, by adding an additional millisecond here or there.
So if we're going to start billing for the actual amount of time that it takes to handle requests, there's always the chance that a provider could deliberately sort of add their little 1% of fraudulent extra billing. Pump up all the bills, but we're already running that risk whenever we bill for CPU time. So right now CPU time is the metric for CPU billing in many systems. I'm proposing that disk time should be the metric too. So whatever issue we have in terms of trustworthiness of providers, we need to solve for both of these resources. It's not peculiar to storage.
Great, thank you.
Hi, Eyal Lara, University of Toronto. So one of the reasons people attribute the success of the cloud is simplicity in the billing model. And this thing looks hairy, complex, and unpredictable. If I'm running in your system and you decide to upgrade and get a bunch of new disks that have higher cache, suddenly lower cache, my prices are just going to go all haywire. Do you think that users really want this as opposed to, just a very simple model that maybe I'm, overpaying a bit, but, I can wrap my head around it?
Well, so right now, users might be overpaying by an order of magnitude. So if you're talking about, for the sake of simplicity, should we be within 25% or 10%, is that good enough, then I might agree with that. If what we're talking about is some users are paying 100 times as much as they should be or 10 times as much as they should be for the sake of simplicity, I don't think that's really a sustainable model. I think that after a while, people are going to get sick of paying such overinflated prices, or cloud providers are going to get sick of having customers that they're losing a lot of money on, and we're going to have to fix it. So I think we're going to have to do something longer term.
So Bhuvan Urgaonkar, Penn State. So continuing on the sort of same line, This is utility, right? This is a utility. So let's why not look at some of the utilities that have been around for decades. Let's say let's take cell phone, right? Mm-hmm. So there are times when everyone wants to make a call. There's a person who talks a lot. Maybe I call to my mom a lot, right? And because of me, there are other people whose cell phone calls get dropped a lot. There is a simple billing model that cell phone companies have been able to come up with, which is, I don't know, $40 a month for 300 minutes or something. It's very simple. And that seems to work. So people adjust their demands accordingly. The market sort of takes care of the consumers' workloads or requests. They adjust based on this pricing. Why wouldn't something like that suffice here? Why should all this complexity be there?
At the risk of getting deeply into the whole cell phone market discussion, I mean, yes, the biggest players in the cell phone market charge $40 a month, and the majority of their customers just prefer to buy that option. At the same time, if you look at the sort of the breadth of the industry, there are a lot of mobile virtual network operators that provide prepaid options where you pay 25 cents a minute. There are other companies that provide plans that start at $10 a minute. There's actually a broad diversity of companies designed to handle sort of atypical use cases or people who aren't willing to just pay $40 a month if they only use the phone for an hour a month. So there's actually lots of people do seem to prefer simplicity instead of paying as little as possible in the cell phone market, but there are lots of companies that are providing other services, other pricing points, other plan types. And I think in terms of businesses, when you're paying $40 a month, I guess lots of people don't lose sleep whether they're paying $30 or $40. If you're a business and you're talking about $30 million or $40 million, all of a sudden you want the accounting and the pricing to be a lot more close to the actual costs rather than just saying, okay, it's $10, I don't care.
I think we have one more patient question.
John Wilkes, Google. So I've just observed in passing, but I don't want to dwell on it, that you don't charge a variable amount by the minute depending on which cell phone tower you happen to be connected to. So I don't actually buy your analysis of the cell phone market as being helpful here. What I did want to ask, though, was it turns out a lot of our internal users are interested in things like latencies of requests, not just overall bandwidth. And I wonder, first of all, how you would take that into account in this scheme. And secondly, perhaps a sort of contributor to that is maybe one way to think about this is in terms of the opportunity cost. The person you thought of as really cheap, which is the guy doing sequential accesses, turns out to be actually quite expensive because they are preventing other people getting access to that disk. Why are we letting them get away with a low price because they happen to be able to take advantage of underlying physics? The cost that they're imposing on the rest of the system is high latency for other users. Maybe they should be charged more. Maybe, in fact, they should be charged a flat rate. Sorry.
So in terms of latency, I suppose, asking for different latency levels may not change the amount of money that a provider is paying. The number of disks they buy, things like that may or may not change depending upon which workloads you're prioritizing. If asking for a lower latency guarantee simply changes which order requests are done in, then it doesn't necessarily incur a cost at the provider. If it influences a provider to buy more disks, then you'd have to have a much more sophisticated model that includes something about how the growth of resources needed to satisfy all the latency constraints are affected by each of the latency guarantees. In terms of opportunity costs, I guess this is not currently taking into effect opportunity costs sort of at a detailed level where each user might be willing to bid different amounts of money to get their requests handled, and servicing one workload means that I can't collect a certain amount of money from a different workload. But I think it's a beginning to move toward that direction, because what we're talking about here is sort of disk time is one of the opportunity costs of handling a request. So the fact that you can't spend disk time on another workload because it's being spent on this workload is an opportunity cost, to which we're assigning currently a fixed rate of 1 cent per millisecond or whatever. And so we're sort of starting to move in that direction with this work. And I think moving it all the way to its conclusion, where some workloads are willing to pay more per millisecond or more per SLO level or things like that, giving that sort of full richness would be a sort of ideal next step.
Okay, let's thank Matthew.